Hello and welcome to Season 3, Episode 10 of the D-Hoop University Podcast. This is your boy, Daryl Harris, also known as D-Hoopster.
We're doing new things in 2025. We're trying to take this thing to the next level. You know what that's about. This is the very first live stream that the pod is putting out there and doing officially. There's some hidden gems on the YouTube page if you've done some snooping around, but this will be the official first one. I don't even know how to put a link on TikTok, but let this serve as exhibit A of venturing out there. This is something that has been capable for a while, and finding sea legs as a solo podcaster is a whole different beast, but I've been doing this for a while, so thankfully it comes somewhat second nature by now. And again, I'm just filibustering a little bit. This is exciting. Let me just let y'all know that it's not lost on me what I'm doing. You know, this is something I've wanted to do for a long time and feel empowered to do so by the work that's being put in. So with that being said, let's go ahead and jump into tonight's game. We really had a doozy tonight. 40-139. The Minnesota Timberwolves outlasted the Denver Nuggets in double overtime. And I just want to spend a 10-15 minutes adding on to what is already a recorded podcast that will come out attached to this recording as well, with my guy JB the Ticket. So that's a whole separate conversation, but I didn't want to watch what went down tonight. And I think that was the game of the year. I'm trying to quickly think of what other game might be the game of the year. Maybe that Chicago Bulls Lakers game, because of the ending. That game didn't feel like this one felt. And by that I mean this felt like a playoff game. This felt like both teams were treating it like a playoff game. At D-Hoop University, y'all know that I have a few abiding rules. One of those being, I look at the season in three stages. This right now is the second stage. There's before the All-Star break, after the All-Star break, between that and the playoffs, and then the postseason in stage three. This is stage two, where teams are treating it like the postseason, if that's what you're playing for. Some teams are. Some teams are playing for Cooper Flagg. You know what I'm saying? The teams that are chasing playoff seeding, getting there, you can't waste this time now, because you have to hit the ground rolling. You have to know what your rotation is going into the postseason. And what's crazy about this Minnesota Timberwolves and Denver Nuggets game is that so I'm watching the game, fast forward to double overtime, and they've got Anthony Edwards guarding Jokic on the inbound, and that's because Julius Randle was getting abused so frequently, and Rudy Gobert fouled out in regulation. And I said, well, why isn't Naz Reid playing? Oh, that's right. Naz Reid got suspended for the brawl with the Detroit Pistons the other night. He and Dante DiVincenzo were out of this game, suspended for a few, I believe, and that was why Anthony Edwards was guarding Nikola Jokic. But let's take it back a little bit. So now we know, Minnesota's playing this game shorthanded. Minnesota needs some, they can't take these games lightly between now and the end of the season, because I believe that they could escape the play-in tournament. I'm pulling the standings up right now. Yeah, Minnesota's in the seventh spot. Oh, man, tonight had big implications. Let me write that down so I don't forget it. And I probably won't, because I'm about to talk about it right now. But tonight was a really big night in regards to the play-in tournament, because Minnesota, 44-32 on the year, was in the seventh spot for about the past week, 2 weeks or so. They're in seven with the Clippers right behind them, only a half game behind. So they're teetering on 7-8. And they have got a few game cushion over Dallas and Sacramento, who are 9-10. So it's not really about falling below there, but one of those two could make it out of the play-in tournament. And the Memphis Grizzlies lost tonight. So now they have an identical record as Minnesota. They hold the tiebreaker based off the standings. But we'll get into Minnesota in just a few minutes because I believe that they are punting on the season. And it looks like Minnesota could escape the play-in tournament. And what's interesting beyond that is that if they do escape the play-in tournament and get the sixth spot, they could be setting themselves up for a series in round one with these Denver Nuggets. So now that we understand why this game felt different than that Chicago LA game, for example, I don't know if there's another game from this season that jumps to the top of mind. I mean, that game with Cleveland and Oklahoma City, where they were both on like 14 game winning streaks, was a pretty big deal, but it was like January, you know, late December. It wasn't peak attention. People weren't paying attention that much yet. They were, because that was such an anomaly. Those two teams with winning streaks like they had facing off one against each other. But no, this OKC, I mean, this Minnesota and Denver game felt different. Oh, Denver's kind of having their way. They actually opened this game, I believe, 14-2. And the first quarter, they were up double digits. It looked like it could have been a runaway. And Minnesota played catch-up tail end of the first quarter to keep it respectable. And I thought that Denver still might pull away. Denver's playing without Jamal Murray, for the record. They don't pull away. They enter halftime, and it's anybody's game, essentially, right? I check in on this game throughout the second half while just vibing out. I wasn't only watching it. And I see Denver's kind of comfortably ahead till the end of the game. I'm also watching with fantasy on my mind because I have Nikola Jokic, and this is the fantasy championship week. I'll be getting to that in just a second as well. But your boy is doing his thizzle, let me tell you. Denver's up comfortably, or so I thought, for much of the fourth quarter. I look and I see a minute left, and Minnesota's up by two. So this is when I jumped in, I rewinded a bit, and I said, okay, what happened? 5 minutes left, Minnesota is down by like eight. And, you know, some possessions go back and forth, and starts to heat up a little bit. And was pretty mild entering the fourth quarter, ended up having like 15 points in the fourth. He gets hot, brings Minnesota back into it, and I've got some notes down, but as for these are just recap notes so that way I don't forget some of the things I want to mention before I wrap this live up. But didn't take notes during the actual game. All of this was just flowing off of memory. I did pause it a lot, rewind it, forced Whitney to listen to me like she was a eighth grade basketball player and I'm the coach that this is why you do this and that. I definitely did that while we were watching it, but yeah, this is where things just stopped making sense between now and the end of the game. Denver ties it up. Minnesota has a chance to win the game in regulation on the road in Denver. Rudy Gobert's fouled out. Anthony Edwards, again, responsible for this comeback win. They're getting clutch performances from, like, you know, Nikhil Alexander-Walker as well. Julius Randle made a couple timely shots. But when I tell you that something about Julius Randle just gives me like runaway vibes when he catches it in a meaningful moment or something where I'm like, no, please give it back. I don't dislike Jules, but I'm glad that, you know, anywho, they get the ball to Ant. They call it. They set this up with the timeout with about 7 seconds left. And I say, hey, this is one shot scenario. There's worst case scenario, this game is going to overtime, is the mentality that I have in this timeout that I'm telling the team. Ant, we're going to get you the ball. We're going to try and get you a look. Ball comes into Ant. They send the double team, right? We should expect this. They send it early. Ant, from one side of half court, across the line, bounces it over to Julius Randle. Doesn't move. There's enough time to where they can get it back to him, but that doesn't happen. Julius Randle, shake and bake. I did not love any of that. Puts it up, misses the rim, put back a Tim, gets swatted by Peyton Watson. We're going to double over. We're going to overtime. Ant kind of shakes his head on the side as they're going. And I'm like, dude, you got to come back and get the ball. I know you're giving it up because of the double. If you're that guy, I know you know that you're that guy. These are the moments where it absolutely matters the most, and there can't be an excuse. I know that that's, you know, the number one knock on LeBron in these moments is, hey, he doesn't have that killer instinct, and maybe that's unfair pressure to put on Anthony Edwards. However, I'm just applying that feedback because this is going to come back to play in the postseason. This is going to be important. He's going to have to study this crunch time film and not make some of the same mistakes again. And not that they were just terrible mistakes, because he's also responsible again for them coming back. All right, yeah, you come off the ball because they're double teaming you. There was no energy or effort after that, which it's fine because you're tied and at least this is going to overtime. Well, here's the problem. We go to overtime. Whatever happens in overtime happens. We're in the final minute again. Denver takes the lead. Pardon me, Minnesota's up. Denver ties the game. Minnesota has the ball with a chance to win it at the end of overtime. And something happens. I'm drawing a little bit of a blank here now because, like I said, I didn't take notes on this part of the game, and I don't want to mistell this story. Anyway, we're going to double overtime now. We're going to double overtime, and that's because they let Jokic, again, he's abusing the defensive matchup on the other end because there's no Gobert. He fouled out in regulation. And I'm watching this with fantasy on my mind, like, Jokic has 50. How much crazier is this going to get? He didn't have a triple-double, wasn't even close to one at the end of regulation. He finished with a triple-double. It was one of those games. We're in double overtime, right? We're in double overtime. Down to the wire again. Denver takes the lead in the final minute. Jokic actually went to the free throw line. Two shots and a chance to take the lead by two. He actually misses the first. Sinks the second. Timeout Minnesota. Ball's coming in. Their ball with like maybe 17 seconds or so. And I've paused it so many times in just the fourth quarter, overtime and double overtime, where I'm like, and you have to execute right now. This is going to matter for the postseason. This matters with you taking that next step. You are playing a defending former champion. You're playing with stakes right now. You're on the road. This is a great test for what the playoffs and what round two and the conference finals are going to feel like. This is a good warm-up because they were there last season. But this is a way to get, hey, all right, I remember this feeling. And I really wanted to see him come through with something. Overtime. Double overtime. Game on the line. Inbound play where he comes off some screens towards the inbounder, curling to the corner. And I'm already like, no, 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 no. Because they've double teamed him for the past, and within a minute, they were already sending the double towards in. And he's not responding to this double team well. He's passing out of it, and he's being stationary. He's taking himself out of the play while his team does something over there on the side that isn't what you want your team to be doing with the game. Finally, in the final minute of OT number two, does make a pass, cuts after it. He's wide open going down the lane, finishes a shot that he should have got fouled on. And that's what he was actually very upset about when they called a foul for Jokic just on the defense. It wasn't even a shooting foul where he split the free throws that put them up by one. And was, you know, beside himself to the ref because he's like, come on, man, I'm finishing through contact down there, but y'all are calling every single thing for him. And keep in mind, Jokic finished the game with 20 made free throws, 19 or 20 made free throws. And he didn't miss that many, but he shot more than that. So there's a lot of frustration, understandably, but that brother's also hard to guard, I'll tell you. Except you got to execute on the other side as well. Inbound play where he's curling to the corner. I don't like it already because there's too much time. There's about 15, 16, 17 seconds. There's no reason to set your guy up for a spot where they're going to come double you. And now we have to kind of play catch up if it's not a get a shot right away sort of scenario. It wasn't. He gets the ball in the corner. The double's coming. He hasn't attacked or tried to dribble around the double team one time. He's on the left wing, pivots the side, tries to go around it, looks for somebody, throws a bounce pass in the direction of a teammate. And it just, oh, it's coming back to me now what was also so frustrating. Anyway, he throws this ball away. Just throws it away. This is his second turnover now in the last 30 seconds. The only reason Jokic got fouled and split those free throws was because Minnesota forced a miss. Anthony Edwards gets the ball in the corner. The entire Nuggets team is still on this side of half court. He throws it over his head across court sideways. Christian Brown intercepts it. They reset, call timeout. Jokic gets fouled, and that's how they take the lead, right? I'm like, Ant, you got to have some poise right there, my boy. The sideline pass is never it. Especially when your entire defense hasn't crossed half court. When I paused it, Jaden McDaniels is behind everybody. And if he just chucks it, they milk, you know what I'm saying? So they're giving this game away. They already had chance opportunities to close it out in regulation and in overtime. And they didn't. And I'm like, guys, you can't squander these chances. I know you're a little shorthanded right now, but this is what the postseason is like. This is when you go down 2-1 and down 3-1. And you're like, I can't believe we're down. We could have won every game in the series. It happens in these moments. So that happened before the sideline inbound where they put him in the position to get trapped. He passes out of it, turns it over. This is a live ball. There's no shot clock. Christian Brown is pushing it for some reason. And Russ is coming down the wing like he's about to Dominique Wilkins something. And you know, Russ ain't got it like that no more. But it looks like he's filling the lane like, yo, give me this or throw the alley. There's one defender back. Brown, head of steam, sure, let's fast break. Westbrook, we got nothing to lose, right, except the game. He's running with them, dishes it to Westbrook. Westbrook bricks the layup after he split some free throws in overtime number one, for the record as well. But kicks it to Westbrook, bricks the layup. Rebound Minnesota. We're going back the other way. 10, 12 seconds left on the clock. Minnesota's down one. This can win the game after we thought they just gave it away. And, oh man, again. This is so crazy because Minnesota wins this game. Again, Ant doesn't get any action. The double team catches him. He passes out of this again. I'm like, Ant, dog, this is like 4 or 5 game winners you've just passed. Game winner opportunities and attempts that you've just passed out of. My dog, shoot it. Make it or miss, man. Let's just see it now. It goes down to Julius Randle again, who I do not want to see with the ball at this time. Shake and bake, nasty something. He skips it. Matter of fact, I recall, he had already done the shake and bake nasty ball. So this time when he catches it off the double, he's like, oh, nope. One more to Nikhil Alexander Walker in the corner. He puts up a 3 basically at the buzzer. 3's online. I thought he hit it. No good. Buzzer sounds. Crowd's going crazy. But wait, we got a foul. Foul on Westbrook. The same person who missed the layup that you had no business shooting because the game was won. Same person that also split a pair of free throws in overtime number one that let the game extend as well. They review it. Foul stands. Nikhil goes up to the line. Hits the first one. Tie game. Hits the second one. We're up. There's 1/10 of a second on the clock. Intentional brick. Jokic pats it, ball game, Minnesota wins. They didn't deserve that win, and at the same time, they earned that win. I don't know how else to put it, but Denver was without Jamal Murray, but this is bad for them, dude. Jokic had 61, 10, and 10, and they lost when they had a lead in regulation. They were up 7 or 8 in the last 3 to 4 minutes. I know you're without your second guy. You can't lose that game. And how much more can you get from your superstar and expect him to turn around and do it again to put you in that position again? And this is a 7 seed we're talking about in Minnesota right now. I dig what Jokic has been doing. I think he deserves to be second on MVP ballots. I don't think he's the most valuable player in the league. I believe that is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander for this season. And though he'll grab all the headlines tomorrow morning because of his stat line tonight, the loss to me sits more. And I get it. It's not, how can you blame him? I'm just not jacking it. I'm just not, dude. It's Shai's MVP this year. It's that simple. I know we, and that's the thing. We know Jokic can do this. The fact that he keeps doing it, yes, it is breaking our brains. It is, you know, forcing us to have very uncomfortable conversations with ourselves about all-time center debates and things like that, especially if he wins a couple more championships. But just the fact that he's replicating seasons that he's had in the past does not mean that, to me, he is the MVP of the league just because he's doing that. It's got to come with extras now. It's got to have caveats, and you know what I mean? That wasn't on the notes, but that was a hell of a game. Crazy, crazy game. And the post-game press conference was just as, you know, insightful to me as the actual game was, because Anthony Edwards, of course, is getting interviewed, and he doesn't want the interview to be about him. As soon as the reporter starts asking him a question, he yells out to Nikhil, waves him over. He's like, come here, for real, come here. And she gets her question out. She's like, what changed for you in the fourth quarter? And he puts his arm around Nikhil and he's like, I don't know, man, but he started making shots. He started balling. Whenever a team needed something, he came through. He is the MVP. Shout out to my boy, man. And then she directed some questions towards Nikhil, which was real dope, man. That felt real genuine. That felt like something a leader does. Leadership comes in, you know, a whole lot of different looks and walks. And Anthony Edwards, say whatever you want, you know. Hey, nobody's above criticism. But he is a leader of that team. And he carries it out on the floor. And in post-game, I get it. It's a little rough around the edges sometimes. But leaders value the whole. They don't take all the credit. They realize contributions across the board that go towards success. And that's what that post-game conference highlighted for me. So again, me being so disappointed that he didn't attempt the game-winning shot or that he didn't jack something up is just me holding him to the greatness bar that we know he's chasing. By all and just because that went tonight, I still look at tonight as a plus for him because, again, he put his team in that position. And you look at the season he's having, he's third or fourth in scoring this year, second in made threes, and these are leaps that he's continuing to make. So he's hitting the checkpoints. He's hitting them. And a win over this Denver team could mean a lot because that could be a postseason matchup in the first round. That would be pretty crazy to see. And the only other notes of the night was that, yeah, Steph had a 50 ball as well. We thought that he would have the performance of the night because he had 8 threes at halftime and almost 40 points. And we thought Steph could mess around and get 70 tonight. Now, he did tap out at, I believe, let's see, I'm pulling that up right now as well. Steph had 52, 10, and 8, messed around and almost had a triple-double. They won the Warriors 134 over the Grizzlies 125. And good game, good showing for Golden State. Draymond had a triple-double. Jimmy Butler had 27. Capitalized on a lot of free throw attempts. They definitely look much more like a team with Jimmy. It's like a team that, you know, you have to contend with in the postseason. But I think Memphis, man, I think Memphis has really punted on whatever their ceiling was for this year. I've watched them in back-to-back games now where there's kind of no other way to describe their fourth quarter performance or their crunch time performance other than them just giving the game away, them just not looking like the better team, like at all, even though they're in the game. They weren't getting beaten down by the Celtics, but they were hanging around. Definitely hanging around. Ja had maybe 30. And it just didn't matter in the fourth. Didn't matter once, you know, in the final 5 minutes, Boston just got them out of there. Memphis couldn't execute. Only 18 points in the fourth quarter. That was a game low for them in that game. And tonight, again, couldn't perform in the fourth quarter. 22 points in the fourth was the lowest. They had more than 30 in every other quarter tonight. And that's a team that, in my opinion, is just kind of losing themselves a bit. It's cool that JB's on because when I was on his show, I talked about the Taylor Jenkins firing because it had just happened the day prior. And I said that, hey, we need answers for that. None, that doesn't smell right at all. You fire your coach even though you're a top three seed in the West a week and a half before the postseason? Who does this? And I was on his show and I just said naturally, I said, well, the first thing that comes to mind is the star player. So is this a Ja Morant kind of situation? This was Saturday morning. And I just said, hey, I mean, Ja's been really in and out of the lineup with injuries that don't always add up. And for the most part, Memphis wins when he plays. But it didn't feel right at all for some reason. His placement on the team this year, his points were down. And just so in and out of the lineup that you didn't feel like he was a part of the team much this year. And if there's a clash between your star and whoever's leading the locker room, whether that's the coach, you know, different kind of coach or another player, somebody usually taking the fall, and it's not going to be the player that the player that's getting paid the most. He usually carries the most weight. And sure enough, I just said that, hey, this makes me think that maybe something was wrong with Ja and the two weren't on the same vision. And an hour later, ESPN's reporting that, yep, Ja didn't see eye to eye with Taylor Jenkins. And they promoted whoever this guy is. That's the interim now. And I don't feel as if he has any control over this team. Desmond Bane shoving Santi Aldama in the huddle in crunch time the other night. Teammates having to be separated. Desmond Bane then comes out in the postseason and postgame presser, tells the media, yeah, no, the coach getting fired is on us. 100%. He didn't take any shots. He didn't lose any games. You know what I mean? We did. And that's a respectful comment from somebody that you are just, hey, I have a good relationship with that coach, so I'm not going to talk crazy about him now that he's here. I'm actually maybe going to have his back in this interview. But simultaneously, you're making your team look crazy. You're making it appear as though the organization zagged when y'all were all trying to zig. When Ja hasn't said anything, and all the reports are that he wasn't beefing with Ja. So are you on the same page with Ja? It's just not a good look right now. And these back-to-back really poor fourth quarter performances just reflect that this team's not ready yet. Not for the postseason, but they'll be in the playoffs. And I don't think they're winning, going past the first round. I just talked about Minnesota having to go to Denver as an underdog. I don't have confidence in Memphis taking down anybody that's in the West in the postseason right now. And for example, they're sliding. They've slid all the way down to sixth. And yeah, they're on the borderline hitting the play-in. And the way it's going, Dallas and Sacramento could beat them in the play-in. Who knows? That's just my only note on Memphis. It feels like they've punted on being competitive this year. You sort of take the back door at the end of the season, I don't really feel like that bodes well for you the next year either. Just because it shows that there's a disjointed team here. I don't know. That's a personal, you know, spin on that, but it's not looking great in Memphis, and that's going to lead everybody to talk about Ja Morant all summer long. So we will wait and see about that. The best news, though, is that Team D-Hoop University, Shooter Shoot, which is our nickname, we are smoking it in fantasy right now. I'm putting the screen up to show you that we, in the categories league, are up 11-0-0 2 days into the final championship week. I've talked about these boys all season long. I'm trying to hold off until the buzzer sounds. But y'all, we haven't lost since December. That is nothing but W's. You feel me? We really haven't lost since December the 15th. So it's only right that we finish strong. You know, Devin Booker, Nikola Jokic leading the way tonight. Huge game from Dyson Daniels. He got me a double-double. Jaren Jackson got me 22. Quickly got me 17-9. I'll take the spot minutes. I will talk about these boys a little bit more once the season's actually over, but we're going back to back. Watch the boys. They're going to change the rules to the league next season. I already know how this goes. That's about it. I'm going to wrap this up now. Appreciate y'all for being on here for the first D-Hoop University live stream. Interview with JB the Ticket coming right up. Joined by none other than proud alum, frequent season 3 contributor, and just wrapping up a full slate, full season of Vegas Scoreboard Express, man. It's appropriate to have you on here today because it's the voice we're going to keep in the loop over here. JB, what's going on?
Man, I'm here. I'm rocking. I'm glad to be here. Thank you for bringing me back to the class. I feel that you're the Roy Casagrande of basketball, okay? You have such a knowledge that goes. Yeah, you know who I'm talking about. That's a very smart man. I watch all of his lectures. Very true. But again, I think you are in that same vein as the leader and head professor of D-Hoop University as Mr. Casagrande or Professor Casagrande is, or Dr. Casagrande is for the Austin School. So again, thanks for having me back. I know that we have been covering a lot of college basketball over the last 2 months, especially on my show. And to see what has happened, I can say that if I wasn't such a dog better and like to get value on the line, you know, my show covers a very in-depth sports betting aspect of what sports is about. I could have never predicted, nor would I have ever thought to predict, that all the number one seeds would have trounced everyone in front of them. I mean, the games were not close many times, and the smaller seeds look like middle school teams out there. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, we got to talk about the climate a little bit, and I'm glad you got the ball going in that direction because I'll throw this cold open question at you, which I'm sure you've got to see a little bit. But Cooper Flagg is different, man. He is beginning to transcend namesake and actual name, image, and likeness in a way that a prospect just hasn't in a while. Like people,
I would say, I agree with what you're saying for this era, but I remember Duke University as a place in the 90s, late 80s, 90s, when I lived in North Carolina and was fortunate enough to have been around some of these players and, you know, saw local kids play in the ACC. Duke had a player named Christian Laettner. He is the greatest player of all time. He is the greatest Duke player of all time. Grant Hill nipping at his heels with Jay Williams right there in the top three, Elton Brand at 4, and Johnny Dawkins at 5. That's the squad. Okay. Cooper Flagg looks like the Plumlee brothers to me. He looks like the cousin. Tyler Hansbrough. I've seen it before. It's just this era hasn't seen it because he reminds me of Chet Holmgren. The most recent player that I can say that is a direct comparison to Cooper Flagg is Chet Holmgren. Okay. If Les Cooper Flagg starts eating peanut butter sandwiches, he's going to have a tough time transitioning to an NBA that is getting a bit more physical. So I don't think that Cooper Flagg is necessarily an anomaly or a unicorn. I do think that he's special for this time, but we've seen similar body style, play type. I mean, Chet Holmgren was that guy. He couldn't be stopped.
No, I don't see it.
He was like, nah, man. He's like, nah, I'm going to let the air out of your tires, JV.
I see a different beast over.
Adam Morrison. Adam Morrison. No, I know he went to the... Come on, man. I've seen this.
These were guys
with even higher profiles.
I don't mind the perspective. I don't mind the historical context. Hey, this could be a bait and switch. We've seen it before. That they've had,
We've seen it before.
Come and go. No, man. No.
Cherokee Park.
No, it's not the case. It's not the case with Cooper Flagg, man. I don't believe so. I think this guy is an elite three-level shot maker. He's got drive. He can facilitate. He can highlight real alley oops. He's a
If he really wants to be dominant, model his game after Kevin Durant. If he really wants to be that guy, go watch Kevin Durant tapes for the next 10 years, and then we can talk about this guy.
I think that there is a foundation there that it's ready to be molded into a Kevin Durant in a way that there hasn't been, and a player with two-way potential because it's the defense as well.
Yes,
in front of the quickest and most, you know.
And that's where Porzingis, when I look at Cooper Flagg, that's what does set him apart. There's his defense.
There's a two-way competitiveness.
Yes.
There's a toughness. There's a dog.
There's some acting ability.
Something that's all matching skill.
A little bit of K-5. It
matches the skill. So it's the combination, man.
Let me get the wheelchair. No,
I see it on both sides of the court, and it's just a unique situation. I think that they were my finals pick. I didn't make a bracket this year because I wasn't too invested leading up, and I actually watched way more of the tournament than I expected. But it's kind of like that every year, and all of the one seeds. It reflects the compounding of the conferences that has happened.
That's a big part of it, yes.
There's familiarity across the board.
The way I would lay it out is that with the NBA, your talent pool of competition is now global. And with college, it went from being regional to now national. Cooper Flagg was a kid from Maine who went to Florida, who ended up in North Carolina. You're going to see that a lot more. And then with the proliferation of the transfer portal, you're looking at now a national recruiting scene that was never really going on before, except for the top 50 kids. If you weren't a McDonald All-American, don't look to travel more than two states over for your college career. That was just the way that it was. Now you're seeing kids who are averaging 6 points a game saying, I'm going in the transfer portal and someone's going to offer me $500,000 to sit on the bench at the new school. There is going to be a reckoning. And when you look at the Final Four, all Final Four seeds, I talked about this on my show. There are other options now. We watched in college football for the past three seasons during the initial NIL era, the Coach Prime era, where teams completely opted out of bowl games. And that was the complete opposite of 20, 30 years ago. Becoming bowl eligible was the entire point of playing college football. It was about program, meaning you stayed there at minimum of 2 to 3 years to develop the skills and the wherewithal to give you that mindset on how to get better, how to stay healthy, so when you go to the next level, you don't end up washing out. Basketball has always been fragmented. So when you're taking players who were 15 seeds, 16, the four play-in teams, everybody 8 seed and down get wiped out, where's your FAU? Where's your Valparaiso? You got Farrakh Munakesh. He's a new head coach. That's the guy who hit the three back in Valparaiso when I was in, like, I think eighth grade. You know, that's over because he was a regional superstar, went to a regional school, played in a program. Program means you need at least 2 years there. And he was able to parlay that 20 years later into a head coaching position. 20 years from now, you're not going to see any of these kids coaching. They're all going to be on documentaries and podcasts because their careers were so fragmented that they don't have an understanding of the process on what it takes to become a winner and what it takes to become an excellent ball player. That's why you have number one seeds across the board in the NCAA tournament, because every single one of the smaller seeds, if you will, the lower seeds, were all transfer students. Look at the team of Indiana. Oh, we didn't get in the tournament. Well, all of you guys got on the bus that Friday. And the coach is flying out as well. Look at the kid from McNeese State. I'm the team manager, and I'm following my head coach to NC State. Well, the team manager just stole $1 million of you guys in NIL money. Okay? It's, again, it's the commodification.
Because there's a couple things I want to throw in there.
Go ahead.
And I want to talk about UNLV both ways, football and basketball, in just a moment and some projections and where they're trending. But this kind of goes back to what I mentioned Saturday morning on your show as well about what does it mean to be in the tournament and what does the
doesn't mean March anything anymore
performance. No, I take it. I disagree. I actually think it's pretty. It's a difference maker in the fact that
I can't name any of these teams that just played. Except for the top five.
There's plenty of people. The majority can't. Neither can I. I can't go deep into it. But there's incentive for guys to come back now because of the financial
deal. They're coming back.
To talk about one of the New Mexico kids who just transferred, left the Mountain West, is going to UCLA, getting money that an entire program in the Mountain West has that they just don't have now in the big, that a school like UCLA has.
And what has he done? What has he done? Yeah. Can he be, can he go down something? An escalator? No, I'm looking for fame. If I'm giving you money, I want people to know who you are. I need you to promote my product. I need you to promote my business. If you're some kid,
it's happening to some extent, and it's a different thing where, you know, your school like LA, where there's what that is just, hey, this is still you flexing your resources.
Right.
You can do that. A school in the Mountain West cannot. I really hope that Dedan Thomas decides to stay because of the first impression that Josh Pastner has made so far in Las Vegas, because we know he has roots here. It also is like a double whammy when you lose players like this to the portal, because we've gotten, you know, talking about the Running Rebels, we've gotten some of the bumps and bruises of development from DJ the past two seasons. So now that you've got a taste of, you know, conference play and a conference tournament, you're going to go somewhere else and another school reaps the benefits of you cutting your teeth over here, which no shame in that decision, because make the best decision for you in all these cases. Mm-hmm. But that's just one of the bitter, you know,
a lot of it's peer pressure too.
The NILs. But I think there's a chance for Josh to really establish something. I think that he's already got intrigue poked, especially what he just did with our folks over on Sports Wrap. That's getting picked up. What he's trying to put down, I think it's getting picked up. What Dan Mullen is putting down, we have, I think, Alex Orji from Michigan on the team now.
Right.
We've got the other quarterback from somewhere else on the team now. And there was a graphic of who are the most long shots at crashing the college football playoff. And UNLV was 10th on that list. And I think we've definitely got a shot at winning the Pac-12.
UNLV could have made it this year if it wasn't for Odom already having his plane ticket after the Boise game. But again, I digress, because these kids now have opportunity for cash tournaments. We have one here in Vegas called the Crown. And when I saw what this was about, it reminded me of the CBI and CIT. The only difference was those were tournaments where teams that felt snubbed from the NCAA tournament and the NIT paid money to get the exposure for marketing. And those two tournaments actually were spurred by sports betting because it gave more games to the sports books.
Yep.
So sponsors bought airtime on these particular networks to run their ads while these games were being played. Shady, but true. But now that
mutual interest, I can see it.
You know, the proliferation of these kids who have produced nothing, who've made no name for themselves outside of their local area, being nationally recruited, it's a double-edged sword for them. Number one, no one knows who you are except for your Instagram followers, and that may be your entire audience. Now, Cooper Flagg, he's risen above that. But there's one. I'm from the era where there was 20 of these guys. Your NBA draft lottery was a thing because you knew your 20 coldest dudes in the country that you've been seeing rock the nation, and a couple of high school kids that's been told this cold, rest in peace, Kobe Bryant, guys like Jermaine O'Neal, Amari Stoudemire, you know, shalom to him. The reality is simple. These new kids are now being paid to be essentially fodder. If you look at the name of what they're getting offered, name, image, and likeness, they're just getting shuffled. When you imagine you end your college career and you put up your trophy room and you've got 9 different jerseys because you transferred due to the COVID rules, 6 different universities, you finish school at 27 with a doctorate, and your trophy room has no trophies, just a lot of jerseys, a lot of signed photos. This is what's happening. Because the reality is, if you're a number 15 seed in this year's tournament, why would you want to do that next year? The travel, the expense, the cost. Coach McNeese State, oh my God, they played so hard and made it to the tournament and lost the general manager and the coach. What incentive was it for McNeese State to spend any money on those players for NIL deals, where not only do they make it to the tournament and get sacrificed, but now you've lost your head coach. So now you have a new hiring process, new money, and just more kids that you're shuffling in. I mean, they got Master P. Dude, they got Master P running a college basketball program. Have those kids call Ricky Williams. I'm not being facetious. I'm being real. Have them call Ricky Williams and ask them how did that work out for him. Okay?
No.
It is what it is.
This is real. No, we're in uncharted territory. This is all happening in real time.
And to throw another thing out there, and I forgot to interject with this. I hate to cut you off. These schools really aren't paying these kids. Schools aren't paying them.
Not yet.
Well, this collective bargaining agreement, trust me, that's going in boosters' pockets for recoup. Why? Because this is what's going to happen. Right now, it's third-party entities paying these kids who are local. There's something called a clawback clause in many contracts, meaning that if you breach that contract, meaning you move or you transfer, they're going to want that money back. Now, right now, kids are skating. They're skating for two reasons. Number one, most of these kids aren't getting paid. They're signing promises to pay. We've seen this. I'm not going to go into it where it actually happened, but times are new now. But this is going on all over the country, especially in the basketball world. These kids are now more getting sneakers and apparel, things that were being given 30 years ago that would create a violation or a sanction. This is now the pay. We're giving cash equivalents out there. See, mind you, remember, I'm still in law school. I'm almost done. And the reality is simple. A cash equivalent is valuable consideration, but the covenants that you have to reach to get that, if that covenant in your contract says you have to stay at this school for 5 years or for 2 years, and you say, well, I've got...
Yeah, it could be anything. Definitely got to do your due diligence.
You know what I mean? I got BYU offering me $1 million to come over there. You know, I mean, it's just ridiculous. Yeah. Because, again, these kids are no faces. They're milk carton. Cooper Flagg and then everyone else. Florida. Go back to my old NIL show 3-4 years ago, I predicted this. You're going to know teams. You're rarely going to know players. You're going to know coaches and teams. We can tell you Florida is the number one seed. You can't name the starting five unless you're a complete basketball nerd. These statements that I'm making were unheard of to be said 30 years ago. And I know to keep saying 30 years ago, basketball changed quickly. When I say 30 years ago, I'm talking roughly mid-90s.
No, it's moving. It's moving. And 20 and, years ago and all, yeah. is early 2000s.
So. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Yeah.
You're looking at the guys, but see, here's the thing. The overlap of generations. College ball was good this year, and I'm not knocking it. I love to watch it.
That's what I want to get to.
I didn't even care that the kids sucked. It was like going to the park, and the kids was balling. I just liked to see it. I didn't care that I didn't know who they were. I didn't care that I didn't know who was their NIL sponsor. I didn't care about that. I just saw good basketball. And that's one thing I do like about the number one seeds. Well, dang it, if you're a number one seed, run the table. Don't get upset in the third round or the second round, St. John's. You know, but, you know, the reality is simple. If you're a high seed, show me something. We just watched an Elite Eight, and to get to the Final Four between one and two, three seeds. That's what you expect to see based on seeding. So it's actually a mathematical formula that just came out to, you know, make a true statement.
Yeah, no, it made sense.
One is one.
And one, it's funny. There's a few snapshots of different methods to get there. You have Auburn, where they have the oldest starting lineup that we've seen in some time. Average age of pushing 23. And you have Duke with all these number one freshmen who are top of their class.
Took the Kentucky model.
Or, you know, the purists. Yeah, yeah.
Or the Calipari model, if you will.
One and duns. Florida is a combination of, yeah, we got some transfer pickups. We got some, he's been here for a minute grinding.
Got some guys from off of South Beach.
We're playing a team as a team.
Yeah.
And I'm in Houston, who is another recent powerhouse who just said, hey, we're going to play a, you know.
I know that style of basketball. I'm going to tell you that style of basketball.
Texas. Yeah, it's just that, hey,
that style of basketball. Let me give you.
Easy.
I'm going to tell you the history of where that basketball came from. I played it when I was a child. That's Columbus County basketball. That's Waccamaw Conference basketball, 2A North Carolina basketball. We're going to play defense, and we're going to throttle you. You're not going to score, but we're going to score. Chris Wilcox, shout out my cousin Chris Wilcox, Whiteville High School. I played at Whiteville myself. Put up a few numbers. You know what I mean? And then I moved up to New York, you know, and kept it going. But the reality is simple. We would throttle teams. We would beat you 65-40. But you would feel that. Pause. You'd be like, damn, we just got beat by 25 and couldn't even get a layup. And you're scoring 10 points a quarter. We cooking you. Yeah. That's who he is. He's from Lumberton, North Carolina. He grew up playing that type of basketball with 12 cousins. You don't even dribble because the ball ain't got no air. You're basically playing football with a basketball. And you got to play keep away. That's what Houston does. I talked about it on my show.
Even what San Diego State has done in recent years isn't too different from that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lane for that to. So that's a unique thing. I definitely want to get into some who's hooping. I'll start the league talk with a story that you all should be seeing right about now. And if not, it's worth talking about still because it's an interesting tale. But the Boston Celtics are smashing the 3-point record books this year. And it was foreshadowed on opening night. They beat the New York Knicks 131 or to like 109. And
yeah, I remember
made 29 threes. Tied a record.
Right.
Opening night. Hung the banner. Mm-hmm. Got the rings. Mm-hmm. And this season, they're as a team, they're 40 off the Warriors in 2022 for the season-long team record for made threes. Isaiah Thomas, believe it or not, holds the team record for single season made threes when he averaged 30 back in 2016-17. Derek White is one shy of that number as we record. The Celtics have 8 games left. He's not the only person that's going to pass it. Jason Tatum and Peyton Pritchard are 6 or 7 threes behind that number. And with 8 games left, I expect them to pass that as well. So just imagine that. They're this team that...
It's the greatest shooting era of the NBA. Contrary to what a lot of the old school guys are hating on it, talking about skills and playing brute ball, these are the greatest shooters the NBA has ever seen. The greatest collection of shooters. You're talking about who's hooping? Let's shout out NBA kids with the jump shot. They got it. I have seen less bricks this season. Look, we talk in NBA. Remember last year, you know, that was almost like talking to me about burnt toast. But this year, I have watched this season. And these guys have been hitting shots. They've been getting to the basket. And again, the Celtics, these are good three-point shots. That's what's scary about the Celtics. These threes you're talking about they're making, they're in the passing rotation. They're in the flow of the offense. And even when the play breaks down, it's an open man. There's no more chucking over two defenders. There's no more Jason Tatum trying a Kobe fade away from the top of the key.
Who do you help off of? But you have to help.
But that's what I'm saying. That's what's so great about the Celtics is that they're playing to their level, and their level is high-level shooting. You got Kristaps Porzingis when he's healthy coming off the bench, giving you a quick 15, hitting four threes. I saw that game and they was playing the Cavs. I was like, what did he – when is he healthy? Why is he doing this to my ticket? You know, of course, I took the Cavs. But, you know, the point I'm saying is they understand and can make the open shot. I didn't see that for the past four or five seasons. It was Trae Young stuff. I'm stepping across half court and I'm bombing it. That's all been gone. I love that. I love that's over. But the Celtics really bought into that. They're playing
where it gets
solid. Yeah. It's within the flow of the offense. Yeah, go ahead.
Definitely is. Where it gets dicey is that, you know, the old saying, you live by the three, you die by the three. And
that's what I'm saying, though. They make theirs. Those are high efficiency. Look at the percentage. Jason Tatum is 47% right now. What is that?
Talked about that. Yeah, he's a little less than that, but it's insane.
Well, that was last stats I checked, but go ahead.
Yeah. Talked about the team record that they're going to catch, that Golden State from a couple years ago. They were actually only 12 shy of that record last season, and they won the title.
That's so what I'm saying.
It goes out the window, and some of why they're able to, I wrote about, and it's because through very detailed roster moves, and Brad Stevens deserves a shout out.
Left the sideline for the front office. Great move for him. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've constructed a team that can present spacing and shooting at every position, 1 through 5. Most of the time, that 1 through 5 can also switch defensively, 1 through 5. And
that's what I was going to say.
And they never sacrifice rebounding.
Never.
So you're third able to rebound, get to the rim, shoot, and defend with versatility.
Third in holding teams' points. 105 points a game. You play the Celtics, you're going to get 3 indeed. That's what I'm saying. I'm looking for a back-to-back here. I'm looking for the Celtics to get back into 80s glory with this team, even with Jaylen Brown with his injury, because everything you're saying is exactly what I've been watching all season. Efficiency. Lineup change. Oh, we're going small. We're just going to lock you down now. Don't come past half court, half-stepping, because we'll keep Porzingis, who you think is playing big man. He's going to fade the wing on the fast break and cash one on you. Whap. Then he comes back.
Yep. And the 18 threes and 50 or so or 49 or so threes they attempt per game are both records as well.
Jason Tatum.
We haven't seen
him has made 238 threes. Did you hear what I just said? I got my stats up right now on CBS.
And he's second on the team.
And he's second. Thank you. They don't miss. Who's hooping? Especially the Celtics. Especially the Celtics. These guys understood the assignment. Look, hit the open shot. Hit the open shot. I'm looking at 3 points made. Jaylen Brown, 109. Derek White, 244. Palin Pritchard, 237. Al Horford. This man is my age. 101 threes. Cooking you.
Getting it done.
Sam Hauser coming in with garbage minutes, busted you for 144. These kids don't miss. Talking about who's hooping? The Celtics shooting percentage is the hoop. They throw it at the hoop, and the hoop opens up like, I want that. Pause. The hoop grabs. I'm telling you, I'm looking at these three-point percentages. Field goals made. Jason Tatum has made 622 field goals.
And not the element, if you're thinking this is going to translate, yo, Tatum has never missed the second round. They're used to the postseason.
He will make 1,000 field goals made. He will tie Larry Bird's record if they can count season and playoffs. He'll get 1,000 field goals made, which hasn't been done since Larry. That's incredible. And he's still, what, 27? This guy's going to be this era's ring winner. He's going to get the rings. We thought it was Giannis, but it's Tatum. He's ready.
Man, that's the he gets it because he'll start the who's hooping. And he wasn't on the list, but deservedly so. Colin Cowherd just gave him a whole bunch of shout-outs. Some people are seeing clips. But Tatum is, man, he's consistent with his presence for Boston. He gets Boston. I haven't watched that new doc on the Celtics yet, but Tatum has adopted it and has exemplified it from day one.
You and just mentioned
rebounding.
They never
talk about him. Yeah.
They never do.
He always slips right outside of that conversation.
I think that has a lot to do with the Olympics, though. There's still questions about that.
Whether you're talking some of the best players to play at Duke, I know that he was there for a year, and I get it. Like,
you're right on that. You're right. Throw him on that list because what he's doing.
You know, he's the second wave of who you think of, but.
JJ Redick too.
Suggest otherwise. JJ's on that list. That Duke list is ridiculous.
But going back to rebounding, why does Jason Tatum have 583 rebounds? He's rebounding like a power forward. When I look at Kristaps Porzingis as a center only has 202. Jason Tatum is
games that he's played twice as many at least two, but he leads the team in rebounding. He's a stud, dude. He's a stud. He's as consistent as LeBron was at his peak.
But Jokic is leading in the MVP voting.
There's something interesting happening there.
You know what
man.
I'm saying? Like, this is what I'm trying to say. What is wrong with... Yeah, go ahead.
I
want
Shea to get it, and I think Shea still has to get it. I think that this late... Whatever... I think this is the formality. Whatever happens between now and the end of the year, it's done with. And Jokic just sat for 4 or 5 games, and Shea hasn't. He also is averaging 35 since the All-Star break.
Yeah, and that's
these
the
anomaly
thing.
Seasons. This is in the same category as the Harden Westbrook MVPs that are deserved. We can't. Hey, you did it. The Allen Iverson MVP. You did it that year. Like what Shea's doing with this young team, and both sides of the ball playing every night. You can't, if you want to hate on his game, it's just because you couldn't guard him.
Right. No, I think Shea Gilgeous-Alexander is what we would have hoped that Andrew Wiggins was going to become, or even OJ Mayo, you know, two guys who were no slouches in their own era, but he is that tweener kind of ramen noodle, Tracy McGrady type, who's going to give you the work. Who's going to give you the work, give you some solid defense, and then when he comes in the clutch, he turns into a different player. I compare him to, you know, Tracy McGrady. When Tracy McGrady was coming into his own in Toronto, and then when he went to the Magic, I think this is like the similar to Tracy's first season with the Magic when Penny let him wear his number. It was incredible. And we were like, Tracy McGrady was playing second fiddle to Vince Carter and Damon Stoudemire up in Toronto. He comes down to Orlando, and he takes that team to the playoffs, and he was a possible MVP running that season as well. You know, didn't quite get over the hump, but I think Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, if he gets this MVP over Jason Tatum is an NBA champion. He's an Olympian, and Jokic. It will now put the proverbial target on the championship for OKC. You have to win it now. You, at minimum, make it to the Western Conference Finals. You do a first-round exit.
They do.
And you got to go to the Western Conference Finals at minimum.
That was the million-dollar question, which was the title of the last episode. It was, will it translate?
Right.
And my summary on that was, I think that it translates to a Western Conference Finals run at best, but that's at best. And ultimately at finals, no, because I think that there will still be an adjustment and acclimation across the roster to postseason atmosphere, what the calls are like, what the intensity is like, what the, you know, awareness level has to be at. And I think that that gets them past a Minnesota, gets them past a 7-8 seed that they'll catch.
I think they got a real shot of beating multiple Memphis.
Veteran squads. Yeah, it gets them past the
Memphis
few of them.
And Minnesota.
Once you have to beat Denver, the Lakers, the Warriors.
That's what I was going at. Revamp Lakers.
Yeah. I think that there's too much acclimation to where you're going against vets that already are ready for game 3, for game 4, for game 5. And you'll be right there.
And there's still a developing cast around Shea. Shea is the unicorn.
Shea's ready, but you got to be at least 1 through 6 or 7 ready.
Yes. Yeah. You took the words right out of my mouth. Yes, go ahead.
There's some unfortunate irony there, possibly. With Oklahoma City, that they might have already shot themselves in the foot and don't know it. But you look at Josh Giddey, man. This is the same team
that traded away Durant,
on James Harden,
Durant, Westbrook. Said,
we'll go this route, and Giddey's got a ways to go, but he was a part of the nucleus. And it got shaky, and we know why it did, but there's no reason to talk about it because he's straight.
Right. Yeah, yeah, you know, there you go. Look, Josh
Giddey.
That
change to this team was, and that allowed this defensive persona that they have this season. Caruso brings that kind of energy and mentality to the locker room, as does Hardenstein. But you're going to need, they're going to be asking a lot of Shea in the playoffs. And that's another reason why I think that, hey, a 7-gamer is going to be a lot of this herky-jerky trying to do, big dog.
And let me ask you this.
Ready for it.
Do we see the emergence of Chet?
I don't think so, because I think that needs – I think we're not there yet. I think we're not there yet. And it's okay that we're not there yet because we're early still. If we're trying to imagine a big picture, we'll get flashes of it. But I think that 24, 25, 26-year-old Chet is the Chet that I think he needs a runway of health and sustained high level. And that was jeopardized a month or two into the season with the hip injury. So what you'll take as a plus, and it's still going to be additive. I don't think you can get peak Chet in the middle of not being like 100% in his body. It helps. It's going to help a lot with Hardenstein, though, in the postseason. I think we'll see a combination of them inside where it's like.
I just think that if they go play the Nuggets, Jokic is going to cook these young guys. I mean, they have no inside presence. That's the one thing that really confused me about their record. They rely a lot on Shea. He's doing great. But
yeah,
the team
guys.
These guys are like Mighty Mouse. You know, it's like a team of 10 Damon Stoudemires. They get past you. They get in, open shots.
It works in the regular season.
It works in the regular season. You know, when you're going up against Nikola Jokic, who catches it at the top of the three, ball fakes and pops a three. And then the very next play, he runs the floor and gets one of those awkward layups to fall. And then the very next play, he comes down, post up Hartenstein, spins off of him, comes back to the lane, underhand scoops him, timeout. Hartenstein is like, man, I should have stayed with the Bulls. This is some bullshit. I just got cooked. And then Chet Holmgren, he going out there with the boot, the Nike Air boot, like, you know, Anthony Davis had. So you got to look at it from that perspective and say, Shai Gilgeous, you have a clone up in Minnesota also named Anthony Edwards. So are we seeing the reemergence of the dominant two guard in the NBA? Because these guys are tweeners right now, 6'5", 6'6", guys who are expected to carry a team deep into the playoffs with great regular season success. However, I also look at the Oklahoma City Thunder schedule throughout the season. It was pretty soft. You had San Antonio a lot, had Atlanta a lot, you know, had, you know, Phoenix a lot of Portland games, a lot of Utah games. It was kind of soft. Not a lot of back-to-backs, had a few stretches, but not a lot. And I think that
I think they got another leap to make. I think there's another
leap to make. They playing Charlotte a lot. You know?
That's about it, man. I don't really have nothing else that we need to get to. I think Jalen Green has been hooping, man. Houston is still a problem. And Jalen Green's on that two-guard list. He's 22 a night for the season. Leads Houston. They're a top 2 seed in the West.
Houston is doing much better than I thought they would after the whole James Harden, Dwight Howard era experiment, if you will, the Euroball of D'Antoni. They've come back to the era of Rudy Tomjanovich. They're playing basketball. I did watch a Houston Rockets game yesterday. A very crisp offense. They are a we run the offense type
team. Deep.
And they have a great defense. Fifth in opponents' points scored.
You saw some of Ben Thompson then.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, yo, who is this dude wiping the glass? Wiping the glass like Kevin Willis. I'm like, who is this guy? Got to take some prop bets on him. Let me ask Daryl if he's got a prop bet list. Because the reality is,
he was who's hooping months ago.
Dude, when you got a glass cleaner like that, that always creates problems for short guards to go cold. We saw an NCAA tournament with Alabama. You know, Sears went out of business, and that was it. Bankrupt, out of the tournament. And you don't expect to see that. And you saw it again today with Tennessee. What the heck was that? Tennessee, dude, they couldn't throw it in an ocean. They couldn't flush soupy poop, okay? Nothing was going down the hole for these guys. And Houston, again, playing that old school Columbus County basketball. We just going to D you up and make open shots and keep running and keep rebounding. When you're tired, we're going to keep running and keep rebounding. And when it goes, you're going to look up and be like, yo, we lost by 20. That was the slowest roll. It's slow roll blowouts. You still running offense. Hey, go. Check, go. Left side. You down 6. Oh, still down 8. Missed layup. Houston is on the run. Now you're down 12. You still running the offense, though, because Houston, they're not running offense. They're capitalizing off of your mistakes. Houston, in their half-court offense, they get down to 7 seconds. That's old-school North Carolina ball. And they try to get a layup, and they try to get an easy shot close to the basket. They rarely shoot threes. That's why the totals for the Houston games are 105 and just ridiculous stuff. But it's close to be hitting. Their total today was 125. Yeah. It went over or under, but I know it was super cheap because
it went under.
Yeah, it was like 111, stupid.
Yeah, some of these other tournament games start today. But
that's my little cat.
That's about it, brother.
I
love that.
This was a great segment. Up, man. Thank you for having me on. I mean, this is what it is, man. Late night basketball talk that you don't really get. And you got to come to D-Hoop University. You guys got to sign up for your curriculum because Dr. Harris here is really, you know, he's a tough professor. He told JB, no, we're not doing that. I didn't get full credit tonight, I'm assuming.
No. You pass. We definitely got to pass.
Because... because of Cooper Flagg. I know. I said, hey, Chet Holmgren. He was like, nah.
My brother.
Not man. Quite. Nah. Thank you. Yeah, man. Thank you so much.
With the pod, like, follow, subscribe, engage on socials. It's time to show up. It's time to show up. Bring your notes.